Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to One Up delivered through the AI channel. I'm your host, Guy Drinkle, and as ever, I'm joined by Carl Wilkinson. How are you doing, Carl?
I'm good, Guy. How about yourself?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. So, on this show, we're going to do personal top tens, and I think on this one we're going to do mine, and then on the next one we'll do Carl's. But before we get to that, we'll do a bit of a news roundup, and Carl's thankfully put together some notes for me, being the lazy host I am. But we'll start off with the first news story here, Carl. Sony addressing the crossplay controversy. Obviously, this is it's been highlighted by Sony's lack of willing to work with other consoles, isn't it? I mean, Switch and Microsoft seem open to it. Xbox and PC, pretty much, it's obviously the same thing. But Sony have seemed to isolate themselves, which is kind of understandable because they are the king of the console at the minute, but they do seem to be a bit more open with it, with the new story you've put here, aren't they?
Yeah, it does seem like maybe the obviously there was a big backlash after E3, particularly not exactly in relation to the cross play, but more so into the cross-platform content with the Fortnite accounts. Like, I think it's once you use your Fortnite account on the PlayStation, it's locked to that in terms of you can't suddenly log into the same Epic account on Microsoft or Switch, meaning there were people who'd maybe spent hundreds of quid on content for Fortnite, and suddenly they tried to play it on their Switch and found you have to start fresh, you know, which obviously they weren't happy with after their investment. Now, I think I've heard since that it comes down to there was a claim from a former Sony executive that it simply comes down to money. And I believe that the thing, it's roughly 20% of kind of the content sales would go to the platform holder. And obviously Sony aren't happy to give up any ground on that to their rivals. But this story certainly shows a bit of promise there. It comes from GameStop with Kevin Knezovich, and I apologize if I butchered his name there. But Kevin writes, during a Game Lab conference in Spain, Sony Interactive America president and CEO Sean Layden held a presentation on PlayStation's legacy. Following the presentation, Eurogamer asked Layden about Sony's controversial cross-play policy and whether the company would be open to allowing it in the future. Quote, "We're hearing it," said Layden. "We're looking at a lot of the possibilities. You can imagine that the circumstances around that affect a lot more than just one game. I'm confident we'll get to a solution which will be understood and accepted by our gaming community while at the same time supporting our business." End quote. While certainly not an outright confirmation that Sony will start to allow crossplay between PS4 and other platforms, it is more promising than the tepid response the company gave earlier this month, shortly after Fortnite launched on Switch. And that full story, of course, is available over on GameSpot's website. But yeah, it certainly seems like, you know, Sean Layden there, he's actually fully acknowledging the backlash they've had since E3, which it mean at least means they're starting to think of a way they might be able to solve this issue and make everyone a bit happier about their Fortnite accounts and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, it does sound a bit more promising. I mean, what are your thoughts on crossplay? I mean, I think we don't really see it in AAA titles, do we? I mean, we don't see it in Call of Duty and first-person shooters, probably the way I imagine people who love crossplay or want crossplay probably want it to go. But we see it in games like Fortnite. I think Rocket League has it, but I think that's just between the PC and Xbox. So do you think crossplay could potentially get into these AAA titles?
Yeah, I can't see why not. I mean, obviously it's worked really well with the likes of Rocket League and Fortnite, with, you know, Xbox players can play with PC players, and now it's Switch players and a lot of people take advantage of that. I'm not really sure why Sony have been so reluctant up until now. They've used excuses such as like security and, you know, but if that was such a concern, why wouldn't Microsoft or, Nintendo, especially Nintendo being as reserved as they are, why wouldn't they share that issue? So I think it probably does come down to money. And, you know, I've heard people say before, you know, Sony are holding their hope because they're top of the pile, that those few kids that maybe have an Xbox or whatever, that their friends being on PlayStation will pressure them into getting a PlayStation so they can play with them. But like, I think that's kind of clutching at straws. I think if someone's going to get a PlayStation, they're going to get a PlayStation for other reasons, you know? So I don't see why they'd be so resistant to it. And I think as a primary PlayStation holder, I'd really love crossplay so that I could play. Sure, we've had our own experience of it lately on our WhatsApp group, trying to sort out some play, and it's like that, you know, these people are on PlayStation, these people are on Xbox, crossplay is not possible. How do we get a game going, you know? So it would be helpful for those situations. Like, so hopefully, what Sean Layden has said means that PlayStation are seriously considering kind of giving up and saying, you know, look, we were waving their hands and we were wrong. Crossplay is cool and getting it sorted, because I don't think there's, Epic have said flat out before they could flick a switch and Xbox players could play with PlayStation players. It's that simple. So what do you think, Kyle? Like, as an Xbox, primary Xbox player, you know, would it be useful to you to be able to play with Sony players easily?
Probably not useful, because not many of my mates, most of my, I think pretty much all my mates are on Xbox, because that's just the way it is. Xbox seems to be the console of choice around here for some reason. Might be the only place in the world. in general, I think it's very useful, isn't it? I mean, even if it's just PC, because they get called the Master Race and all that stuff, but if they're mates with casual gamers and want to play something, I mean, especially with Xbox, and I'm not sure how easy it is with PlayStation, but to connect with Xbox mates and PC mates, it seems so easy. Now you just open up the Xbox app, and then you can just chat as if you're in a party, like on Xbox, so it's pretty easy that way. Or if not, you just use another party app kind of thing that you can obviously find on the internet. So it just seems so easy to connect, especially at Xbox and a computer, but obviously being Microsoft, you'd expect that to be easy. But if Switch is, Nintendo's always going to be the small dog in this fight, isn't it? Let's be honest. So I think their openness to it, I think you can understand it, because they just kind of want to, I don't want to say milk the other two's reputation, because they're not doing that. Nintendo's got its own hardcore fan base, but I think to connect the wide world of gaming, I think Nintendo have to do it. But so I don't see what damage it would do to Sony, because this sort of stuff isn't what's going to convince people to get an Xbox or a PlayStation. It's going to be your exclusives, your controller, where your mates play and stuff like that. So I don't think crossplay is going to affect it that much. So it just seems weird reluctance for no reason for me. But it's promising, and I think it's just adds to the player pool, isn't it? Because, I mean, Rocket League's probably where I've experienced, and you can kind of, well, you can tell just by the names alone who's playing on PC and stuff like that, and I'm not sure how big a difference it makes in a game like Rocket League, but I imagine on the shooter games it can make a big difference with the mouse and keyboard, so it'll be quite interesting to see skill levels change and consoles change and stuff like that. So it is interesting. So we may as well move on to the next news story then. I mean, this one's been kind of going on for a while, and it just seems a bit nonsensical to begin with. So PUBG have dropped the Fortnite copyright lawsuit because, well, the grounds for it seem stupid, as the battle ends in a draw. So was this just PUBG getting a bit bitter, in your opinion, because Fortnite kind of, well, it stole pretty much all of PUBG's thunder, especially when on console?
I never really understood it, to be honest. I mean, I think it does come down to bitterness because, as you say, like, it's just totally Fortnite. Once they launched their mode, people at first were like, oh, no, it'll be nothing. You know, PUBG's the original, but Fortnite just did it so much more polished. And, you know, of course, they were always going to, because, you know, it was coming from Epic, who are, you know, veterans in the yeah, shooter genre. But they just did it so much better, and they've just gone from strength to strength. And while PUBG has kind of waned a bit, you know, people didn't like the new map, people didn't like some of the new modes, and it has really...
It's a train crash on console as well. It's absolutely horrendous.
so I've heard. So I think that just comes down to it. But like, as for the actual grounds for the legal action and for the complaints and the threats and all that, I don't think there really is anything. I mean, like, I don't think you can trademark a game mode, and that's what this is at the end of the day. It's not like team deathmatch, you know, or domination, or
it's basically just free for all, isn't it? That's the thing. Whoever first came up with free for all can just go, you're chatting shit, I made this.
Yeah, like it's just a single no respawn, like, survival mode. I mean, I was playing modes like that back in Rainbow Six you know, years and years ago. Like, so, and the whole idea of a battle royale anyway comes from, you know, that I think was it originally a book or a movie, the Japanese movie?
The film rings a bell, yeah. I'm not sure about
books, yeah, so...
Everything originates from a book, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So I think they should be suing PUBG if so, you know? So I just always thought it was a bit nonsensical. I never really thought this lawsuit was going to go anywhere, but... I mean, the story here is it comes from The Verge. Tom Warren and Tom Wright's Korean company PUBG, a subsidiary of Bluehole, has dropped its lawsuit against Fortnite makers Epic Games. The PUBG owners originally filed a lawsuit earlier this year alleging copyright infringement against Epic Games. While PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds soared in popularity last year, Epic Games introduced its own Battle Royale mode in Fortnite with similar features, all built on the same Unreal Engine 4 that was created and licensed by Epic Games. Bloomberg reports that the lawsuit has been dropped, but it's not clear why and whether there was any settlement between PUBG and Epic Games. PUBG developer Bluehole previously revealed it had growing concerns about the similarities between the two games, and it's a battle that seemed to be boiling over into the courts with this lawsuit. Both Epic Games and PUBG developer Bluehole are part-owned by Tencent Holdings, and Tencent has reportedly been nearing a deal to increase its PUBG investment to 10%. While it's unlikely a copyright infringement accusation would complicate that deal, the lawsuit would be difficult to prove and win, particularly when Fortnite has copied PUBG's ideas and not necessarily its content. I mean, and that kind of sums it up. I mean, PUBG doesn't really have any original content. Mm. It's made using assets from the Unreal Engine store. And, like, it's tried to make out as if a frying pan as a weapon is like its original thing. Like this big deal is made of the frying pan. But I'm pretty sure I've played games before where frying pans can be used as weapons.
I'm pretty sure you could in Hitman, if I remember correctly.
Probably. I think anything is a weapon to Agent 47.
Yeah, pretty much. I think, well, PUBG, it's just an extension of armor, isn't it? That's the thing. It started off as a mod, not a game, and then just, fortunately for them, it's just kind of blossomed into the mega thing it was on PC, but it struggled on console, as I've said. But we'll move on from that. So we'll get on with the rest of the news quickly. I mean, there is one that's quite more debatable than this, but PlayStation Plus free games for July revealed: Heavy Rain, Absolver, Black Ops 3, Rayman, Deception 4, Space Overlords, which is PS Vita, and Zero Escape, Zero Time Dilemma, which is also PS Vita. I mean, anything you're going to pick up there?
Actually, there's some games there actually already own, like Heavy Rain, but it is that's probably the highlight of the month. You know, that's a big title. I remember playing it back on the PlayStation 3, and I would urge anyone who hasn't played it to play it, because it's probably the high point, for the Quantic Dream games. I mean, it's just an excellent storytelling. Though sometimes the QuickTime events can be a bit frustrating. I actually also own Zero Escape, Zero Time Dilemma. It's a really good, they call them visual novels, is it? You know, the kind of story based game, but it's quite dark. It's cool, kind of Japanese animation. But outside that, you know, Rayman 3 HD, I have a bit of nostalgia for Rayman 3. I remember renting that back in the day on the PlayStation. So I might download that and play it for an hour or so, just for a little bit of nostalgia. But overall, it's not a bad lineup if you have the platforms. We've seen some dire months where you're looking and you're like, yeah, I'm not going to play any of these games. But you know, when you've got a triple A title in there, it's always a good sign. So I'm sure there'll be something for people there to pick up this month. So kudos to Sony for a strong month.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's looking a lot stronger than Xbox's, admittedly. But we did have Metal Gear Solid 5 the other month. So I can't get a big game every month, I suppose. But Xbox Games with Gold, I should say, is Assault Android Cactus. I mean, yep. Death Squared, Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown, which is a backwards compatibility, and the other backwards compatibility is Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell Conviction, which I might pick up there because I've never really played.
We actually talked a bit about that, I remember, on the E3 preview. And as I said, I played that game religiously. Like, I did everything that was possible to do in that game. Like, it's so good. Like, I think the best is the kind of, I'm going to say Terrorist Hunt, but I don't think that's correct. I think that's what they were called on Rainbow Six. But basically, where you just have to go in and clear an area out of, like, terrorists. And it's just so cool. Like, you know, hanging from the ceiling, sneaking around, headshotting guys, hiding their bodies. That game's excellent. Like, I would urge you and anyone else to give that a try when it comes out then in the latter half of the month. Outside that, I'm going to be honest, I've never really been a Virtua Fighter fan. I think it's kind of a poor fighter series. If you're going to play a 3D fighter, go with Tekken or something.
Yeah.
I have no idea what Assault Android Cactus is. Death Squared, though, I have heard that mentioned a lot. Like, I'm, you know, I can't think what it is, but I'm pretty sure it's popular enough. See if I can get a Metacritic score up just out of interest. 78%. That's not too bad.
That's decent.
It's a cooperative puzzle game for 1, 2, or 4 players. So yeah, like that looks like, so certainly, as I said, that's a game I've seen mentioned before, and people seem to enjoy it. So that might be one worth checking out for the Xbox owners like yourself.
Yeah, well, it's free. If it's free, I'll give anything a go.
Exactly.
Yeah, but this is probably the biggest news. I literally hadn't heard anything on this, but Google is planning a game platform that could take on Xbox and PlayStation. I mean, as everyone pretty much with an internet connection knows, once Google puts their mind to something, they will run it. As we know, Google now runs the internet, basically. I mean, does anyone use Bing? So yeah, if Google are trying to dip their toe into the gaming industry, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Because if they put everything behind it, they could really take over the industry, couldn't they? And there's only so much loyal fan base can do to put off Google, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, Google, like, this has been something that's been brewing for so long. Like, it feels like it's been years and years that we've been hearing that Google's planning to enter the industry. I mean, obviously, they hired, only earlier this year, they hired Phil Harrison, who, of course, you'll know as, like, one of the top dogs at Microsoft. And also then, previous to that, he was similar at Sony. Like, he's been well embedded in the industry. You know, he knows his way around the place. So it's clear they've got ambitions. I mean, they also rivaled Amazon for buying, Twitch. And they own YouTube. And of course, gaming is probably the biggest thing on YouTube. I mean, the biggest YouTuber is a gamer. PewDiePie. Not that I see where his popularity comes from, but that's a topic for another day.
Yeah,
but
I don't want to be saying too much bad things about him because, yeah.
Yeah, that's threaded ground.
Yeah.
But, so, like, it comes as no surprise, but we never heard anything too solid until now, but this story comes from Jason Schreier over at Kotaku, and of course, he possibly has the best sources in the industry, or at least he's one of the best sources. So, you know, there probably is something to what he's heard. But he writes, in recent months, however, the chatter about Google has gotten louder. At the Game Developers Conference in March of this year, Google representatives met with several big video game companies to gauge interest in its streaming platform, which is codenamed Yeti. Sources said the existence of Google's Yeti was first reported by the website The Information earlier this year. Just an important point. Google also took meetings at E3 in Los Angeles a few weeks ago. Those sources said, and from what we've heard, the company is looking not just to woo game developers to the Yeti service, but to buy development studios entirely. So what is the streaming platform exactly? Like Nvidia's GeForce Now, the Google service would offload the work of rendering graphics to beefy computers elsewhere, allowing even the cheapest PCs to play high-end games. The biggest advantage of streaming, as opposed to physical discs or downloads, is that it removes hardware barriers for games. Games like Call of Duty can reach a significantly bigger audience if players don't need an expensive graphics card or console to play them. As one person familiar with Yeti described it, imagine playing The Witcher 3 within a tab on Google Chrome. Sounds too good to be true, doesn't it? Or sounds too much like the promise of other streaming platforms like OnLive, which fail because of lag and video compression that reduce quality. Many of the rumors we've heard need to be presented with some skepticism until we actually see them in action. One pie-in-the-sky idea I've heard floated, for example, is heavy integration between Yeti and the Google-owned YouTube. Imagine you're playing a game and you run into a tricky boss or don't know how to solve a puzzle. Instead of opening up your laptop or checking your phone for a guide, you can press a button to activate an overlay on your screen that queues up a YouTube walkthrough of the game you're playing. Whispers have been quieter about Google's hardware, whatever that might look like, but the rumors we've heard suggest that it will link up with the streaming service in some way. We're not sure whether Google is looking to compete with the technical specs of the next PlayStation and Xbox, or whether this Google console will be cheaper and low-end, relying on the streaming service to pull weight. And the full article is available over on Kotaku. And, you know, that kind of, it's just kind of further on what we've heard before, that they want to bring out a box and they want to bring out a streaming service. You know, I'd, as Jason seems to be in his article there, I would be a little bit skeptical of streaming service because I don't know. Did you ever try OnLive back in the day?
No, not really. I've always just been console, really. I've never really seen the way that Steam is. I mean, you can get a PC game for however much, and it's just the fact if you don't have the hardware, I don't see the point of being a PC gamer. So streaming services have never really done it for me. So yeah, if that's the route Google are going to go, I'm not sure how big a threat it will be to Xbox and Sony. So yeah, it does seem a bit wishful thinking, I suppose, if that's the right way to put it. But yeah, what do you reckon? I mean, what was it, the one, the name, Nvidia or whatever it was? Have you had experience with streaming services like that?
No, I haven't used the Nvidia GeForce Now. I did try on Live back in the day. I actually played like a trial of the first Witcher game on it, and I mean it was okay, but there are kind of lag spikes and the compression wasn't great, and I think that's ultimately why on Live went down the Swanee, really, and why they're not around nowadays. I mean, obviously Sony have tried it with PlayStation Now after they bought Gaikai, but it looks like that hasn't really worked out, because there's actually rumors, it wasn't in the news this week, I think it was last week, but that Sony are considering making PlayStation Now titles downloadable, so that if you have a PlayStation Now subscription, you can download the titles and save them to your hard drive, rather than streaming them to your console, which obviously would sue people with kind of less consistent internet connections. But that would kind of suggest to me, I mean, it's basically like they're kind of copying Game Pass from Xbox and with that. And that would suggest to me, obviously, that the streaming service is improving that popular, you know, like I think it's certainly a concept that could work, but I think it's going to take some more time, because let's be honest, we both live in kind of areas where internet speeds are high, but there's a lot of countries worldwide and even areas within countries. I mean, there's parts of Ireland where, you're almost still on dial-up speeds, you know, so.
I haven't had HD for that long, to be honest. Not HD, but fiber optic, for that long, even in my area. So, it's weird. Like, I think it was only Virgin Media who did it for a few years. It's only Sky and BT who recently have put it in. So, I think, as you said, streaming services, it's so dependent on the infrastructure of internet speed and stuff like that. I mean, Ireland has some dead zones. I mean, even Britain has some dead zones. I think Cumbria isn't that great for it and stuff like that. So, and that's two very, very first world countries. I mean, the world of gaming is meant to be accessible for everyone, isn't it? And if you don't have a good enough internet speed, it just screws you. So, Do you think Google have just scared of making just basically a console? Do you think that, because I mean, there's been rumors of Apple getting into the gaming industry as well, isn't? Do you think people are just put off by getting into this new venture because, well, it is dominated by two companies, and maybe three if you count Nintendo as well, but it is just dominated by three companies, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, as there isn't room for that many platforms, and like we've seen people try and enter the fray and fail, and we've seen some companies that were around originally, like Sega and Atari, and you know, that they've just gone the way of the dodo, as they say. And so I think it is a difficult kind of industry to enter, and that's why I think when you hear about an Amazon or a Google trying, they always seem to have like an angle, like, oh, our box is also like a media box, or, you know, that kind of thing, which I think ultimately doesn't really work either. But at the same time, Google and Amazon have so much money that they can literally try this venture, and if it fails, it fails. You know, it's nothing to them, you know, so. I mean, I don't think, obviously Google are taking it quite seriously with the way they're going about it. So it'll be interesting to see how it all works out. But for me personally, as I said, I'm just a little skeptical because of my past experiences with streaming services, and also with, you know, just knowing that the way it's so reliant on internet infrastructure, and knowing how some areas can struggle for that. So I think it's definitely one to just be keeping an eye on, but I wouldn't be I wouldn't be running out to get this Google system when it first launches, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, everything's dependent on price, and I think that's why the Switch is kind of surviving, because it's a bit cheaper, isn't it? So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how Google and other big companies dip their toe in the gaming industry. But shall we move on to the top 10 now, Carl?
Yeah, no, this is what I've been looking forward to this all week. Getting to know the kind of gamer you are a bit better.
So I'm going to hand over the hosting reins to you, because this week it is my top 10. So here you go, your hosting debut. Let's crack on, shall we?
All right. So how about, Guy, we just jump right into it and you start us off with your first game on your list.
Right. So you said originally don't do it numbered, but I have done it numbered, but do the order in any way you want. But at my number 10, I've got Bioshock Infinite.
Good choice. And why is Bioshock Infinite deserving of a place in your top 10, in your opinion, Guy?
I played Bioshock 1. I got that as kind of a Christmas present. I think the story with Bioshock 1 was Halo 3 was meant to be my Christmas present, but I think that came out like in the early autumn, so that didn't stay closed till Christmas. I kind of got that, and I think my dad ended up getting me the Bioshock Special Edition for Christmas. And at first I was like, oh, that's probably not my cup of tea and stuff like that. And I think it ended up just gathering dust for a while. But eventually, me and my mate dug it out, and we finished it like two times over, Bioshock 1. But I was probably a bit too young, but too stuck in the COD generation to appreciate Bioshock for what it was. So when Infinite came around, I was probably in the right maturity to appreciate it a bit more. And Infinite is such an absolute mind. Screw it. It deserves the swear word. It's an absolute mindfuck of a game. just the way the story develops and how it ends. And if you haven't played this game, I mean, you don't have to play the first two to understand it. I think that's the best thing about it. So I haven't even played Bioshock 2, which says it all, really. But Bioshock Infinite, it just got in my head like not many games do. And it's such an emotional story, and I think it's Elizabeth who the NPC is, who the story goes on about, and she's probably one of the best NPC like sidekicks in gaming history for me, because it just brings out emotion and everything, and you get these little choices that don't seem to impact it that much, but just little story tweaks, and I think it's just an absolutely brilliant game. I mean, have you had experience with the Bioshock franchise?
Yeah, I've actually played through and finished all three games. Like, I mean, it's one of my favorite modern game series, and I won't go too much into it because, you know, it's possible spoiler. Maybe a Bioshock game might pop up in my top 10. But I mean, with Infinite in particular, you know, I can only really echo what you've said. I mean, it is, the story is absolute crazy. I mean, especially towards the end, just like the twist in the story, and it's just like, wow. You know that popular gif on Twitter where you have the 11 out of Stranger Things doing the like mind it. That's just the best way. It's just like, what a revelation. And you know, just the, as you said, Elizabeth is like a brilliant character, and then even your playable character, Booker DeWitt, who I believe is voiced by Troy Baker.
I think so.
And the characters are just amazing. Like that's an example of how to write for a video game, certainly. So I think it's a game that you couldn't question on anyone's top 10 list. So certainly I can appreciate you including it on yours.
Yeah, it's a brilliant one. I mean, I'm not sure what they're going to do with the Bioshock franchise and where they go from it, but it's a special franchise, and I'm surprised I haven't gone back and played number 2, to be honest. But yeah, it's so good. It's so good. But number 9, Carl?
Yeah, Let's just keep going.
Yeah, Neil kind of made me put it in my list from our WhatsApp group. That's Neil Devlin. I've completely forgot about it because I was focusing on console. I was looking when I was making my decisions. I was looking through all my achievements from like Xbox 360 days and stuff like that. And then he put his list in the WhatsApp group, and it's Pokemon Red. I had Pokemon Green somehow on disc. It was in Japanese, so I had no idea what was happening. I think I originally wanted Pokemon Blue, but I think my family ended up getting Pokemon Red. I had a Game Boy Advance, and I think anyone who's in like their mid to late 20s played Pokemon as a kid, didn't they? I think that's the way to look at it. I mean, it was the franchise. It was probably the biggest franchise of handheld gaming. And obviously, coming from me, the late Game Boy generation, you're probably more of the Game Boy generation. It's just a special franchise for me. It just ate up the hours, and it's just an ease of access. And it's not the most detailed like RPG, but to incorporate the Pokemon franchise into such a simple and easy game, it's just an absolute brilliant game. And I think anyone similar age to us is probably going to have this in the top 10 list.
So I'm curious, well, like, people tend to have different paths into Pokemon, slightly, so often overlaps, but like, what was your kind of, what, how did you get into Pokemon?
I think it was the cartoon. I was probably that young, but I had all the trading cards and stuff like that. But the cartoon is what stuck out, because Cartoon Network generation, Nickelodeon. This was before Disney Channel and all that. And I think that's where it was. Just Pokemon cartoon. It was just on all the time, and it was so easy to watch. And when I eventually got a Game Boy Advanced, it was just natural. I also had Silver as well, but the original one, Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow. I don't like Yellow. As I said in the WhatsApp group, I think Pikachu's a twat.
controversial opinions. Yes, that's what we're known for. Yes, so yes. We have at least one a week.
But no, I think it was the cartoon and then the trading card game as well, which I was pretty shit at. I don't think anyone my age knew how to actually play it properly. And then the Yu-Gi-Oh came along, and that's when I actually played games like that properly. But no, the cartoon, the everything. It was just such a complete universe, and I don't think we've ever seen anything like it again. I mean, Yu-Gi-Oh was big for a while, and then you had a bit of Beyblade and stuff like that, but Pokemon, it's just one of them franchises that's kind of got immortal status, hasn't it? But did you play Pokemon games when you were a kid? If so, what was your starter Pokemon?
Yeah, I also had Pokemon Red first, and then I later got Pokemon Yellow, and then I actually played through Pokemon Silver completely in Japanese. So funny you said you had Green in Japanese. I had a friend of mine he's from Taiwan, and he went home for the summer, and he came back with a Japanese copy of Pokemon Silver. It hadn't actually released in the West yet, and I played through it he bought an American strategy guide, because it was out in America by that point, but it wasn't in Europe yet. And I got the strategy guide and used that to kind of cross-reference the items and stuff. And I finished Pokemon Silver in Japanese without knowing what the hell was going on. But I always loved Pokemon. I mean, I got into it through the same as yourself, the cartoon. I remember, actually, funny enough, the episode. I remember I was going out with my mother, and I stepped into the kitchen, and my brother had came in from school, and he's switching through the channels, and he flicked on Sky One. There's Pokemon. It was the second episode. It's probably one of the only episodes that stands in my head, the one where Team Rocket attacked the hospital. And I was just like, what is this? This is awesome. These monsters. And then from that moment, I wanted everything, the cards, the games, the books, the, you name it, I had it. Like, so, I mean, I think, as you say, like, Pokemon is synonymous with people that kind of grew up when we grew up, you know, if you're in your mid, as you said, to late 20s, you probably played a Pokemon game. And if you didn't, I probably feel sorry for you.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, imagine being a Digimon kid. God.
And oh, you asked my starter Pokemon.
I did.
Charmander was my starter Pokemon. Later on, though, I became associated with water Pokemon, and I just every game we'd start, me and my friends, I'd always pick the water Pokemon. But first time around, it was Charmander. I liked red. That's why I bought red versions. How about you? Who's your starter?
I'm kind of similar to you, apart from I had Bulbasaur as my original one, and I think the fact I couldn't get green, but I had played green. I always liked Bulbasaur in the cartoon and stuff like that. But similarly to you, as I've grew up, I kind of turned into a Squirtle starter, which I think that's just from immaturity, and Squirtle's kind of a funny name. And I think that's why it is. But no, I think Bulbasaur was the original one. And I think that was probably because my brother was a Charmander starter, and I always thought my brother was a bit of a dick. So I just wanted to be different. So yeah, I've always been grass type and then water type as I grew up. But this is the next one on my list here, Carl, is probably a bit controversial, a bit more personal compared to some of these. Army of Two.
I did actually play that game.
Yeah. It's probably one of the best co-op games I've ever played, and that's probably why I've got it here, because I've spent so many hours, not just like online co-op, it's proper split-screen stuff. I think this is probably one of the last games I've ever played where I had the split-screen experience, and I think that's why it's a special game to me. Especially the first one, not the second one, or not the Devil's Cartel one. I mean, anyone familiar with this franchise will probably throw up a little when they hear the Devil's Cartel. I played like the demo of it, and I just went, nope, that's shit, not playing that again. But Army of Two, it introduced a proper good story into a third person shooter, and the co-op experience, it was just so unique at that time. I mean, there was co-op games. I mean, you could play any first-person shooter in co-op, whether it's Rainbow, COD, Halo, whatever. But Army of Two, it was built for co-op play. And to have, I think it was back-to-back mode, it was just mindless bullshit fun. And the fact you could make every gun gold and take the piss, and it had a system to get heat from the enemy and stuff like that, so you could customize your character, to one being the tank, which was obviously the big bloke, which was Tyson, I think it was, and the other one was Elliot. I might be the other way around. It has been quite a few years since I played it, but it just seemed the perfect game to play with one of your mates, and yeah, it was just so special to me. I mean, you said you played it. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did actually. I think I rented it. I think it was like a week rental at the time. And my friend and I, we played through it. We finished the story. And then even after we finished, I brought it home and I was playing on my own with the AI partner, which isn't quite as satisfying, but I kind of, as you said, funny enough, you said the guns. Like, I remember just playing to get all the golden guns. And then like, it was just kind of fun just to be running around with all these blinged out guns. It was a solid co-op shooter, and I remember like what we had a lot of appreciation for was the fact there was a dedicated button to giving your partner props. Like, yeah. What more can you have for a co-op game? And I think you summed it up really well, like a game like that you can play with your friend, like a decent game, and that you can play with a split screen with a friend can bridge the gap to like a brilliant game that single player, because I think that it's partly down to the experience you have with the friend. Who in particular did you play it with?
Oh, it was one of my mates. I mean, we kind of grew apart a bit, but we do talk occasionally on Facebook and stuff like that. But I think it was Matty Skiok, my mate, and he was the one I played Bioshock as well with, actually. But yeah, me and him, we hammered the hell out of that game. And then when Army of Two came out, I was playing with some of my more long-term mates that I am still mates with now. So yeah, the first two games, as I said, Devil's Cartel was horrendous, but the first two games, it was just so good to have a cooperative game. I mean, now it's all about online and stuff like that, and I just like having that, the co-op campaign kind of thing. And yeah, it'd be one of them franchises I wouldn't mind seeing back if they did it properly and not an absolute mess. But what number am I up to? I'm up to number 7, and this is where the big hit has come out here, Carl. Gears of War 1, and this may seem a bit low, but you'll probably understand why once I get into the other games. So, Gears of War 1 for me was probably the first ever game that proper grabbed me before I even played it. You know when you see trailers now?
Yeah.
They're just a bit bland and stuff like that. But do you remember the Gears of War 1 advert where it had the Mad World.
Yeah. It's arguably the advert for a video game that sticks in my head the most. Yeah. Like, even as soon as you started saying it, like the trailer played in my head. Like,
yeah. That's probably the best trailer of not just games but anything I've ever seen. I don't think any trailer's ever advert. It's not even a trailer. It's an advert. Grabbed me like that, and it just instantly made me want to play it. And I think it was either 15 or 18. So fortunately, my family let me play it on the down low. But I mean, Chainsaw and big lizardy mutant bastards with Bender from Futurama. What else do you want? it's such a brilliant game.
It really was. I think we talked about that on the back in the preview pod. As I said, Gears of War was the reason I went out and bought an Xbox when I was saving for a PS3 at the time, and I don't regret it. Like, Gears of War was enough reason to own an Xbox, because it was just fantastic multiplayer, and the single player campaign was a hell of a co-op ride as well. Like, so I mean, it's almost the perfect shooter if there is such a thing. Like, I can certainly see why you've included it on your list.
Yeah, I mean, I think Halo dominated like Xbox original, and that's what kind of started that. But for Xbox 360, Gears of War was the one for me. Especially the first two were just so good. I mean, 3 was good, but I had it spoiled for me, so you know. Bastards. So yeah, Gears of War 1, it was just such a special game, and it grabbed me. And just to build the relationship between Marcus and Dom, it was quite new for a shooter game for me anyway, because I was obviously quite young, to have that relationship of friendship built up quite quickly. And I think that's what 4's doing a bit, not as well, because they're kind of just trying to rush a bit. Whereas 2, it was kind of so emotional so quickly, it was just really good. And it, as we said, I think we said on the review, on the preview and the review, it the need to save this franchise, because especially on Microsoft's end, it is one of the special ones. I mean, it's probably only second to Halo for me, for Microsoft franchises. So I hope they keep doing it justice. But yeah, Gears of War 1, it, again, similarly to Army of 2, co-op experience there, it was just brilliant and probably a bit ahead of its time. And it was such a goddamn pretty game for its time as well. I mean, chainsaw and things in half with nice graphics. It was just like, yeah, this is good. This is good. But yeah. And I think I've mentioned number 6 here before in the pod with Bioshock, Halo 3. Two of Microsoft's biggest franchises in a row, and I think I've got most of the shooters out of the way here, but for any shooter to get on a top 10 list is quite impressive. I mean, COD almost got in there, and that was pretty, I think COD was the only one I got in because it was a big part of my teen years and stuff like that. But for shooters to get in above like RPGs and other big games, it's just so impressive. But Halo 3, it was the pinnacle of the franchise. I mean, I really like Reach, but the Master Chief story needed to be in my list. That's why it's 3 over Reach for me. And 3 just had the best campaign. It probably had the best last mission in gaming for me. I mean, there's good, awesome quests and stuff in Oblivion and Skyrim and The Witcher and stuff like that. But Halo 3's last mission for me, where I think everyone eventually found that talking grunt, is It's one of the best missions forever, and for me, it's the pinnacle of that franchise. And similarly to Gears of War 1, they're not doing the franchise what it was justice anymore, and it's kind of sad to see. But hopefully, Infinite rekindles that. But we're not here to talk about that. But Halo 3 for me, it was just absolutely perfect and had everything. It had everything. Halo 1 aged a bit. Halo 2. Was great co-op experience, but I don't know. I think people see Halo 2 as one of the best, but the story just wasn't the same to me. And I quite like the elites and stuff like that rather than the brutes. So Halo 3 bringing that back and obviously being the Arbiter as well. I really like the elite, so playing as the Arbiter is quite cool for me. So yeah, Halo 3. I mean, we talked about this franchise on the preview and review. Halo 3, is that your favorite Halo game?
That's a good question. It's definitely up there. I mean, funny as you've been talking there, I was kind of recollecting my experiences with Halo 3, and I remember I actually played through the campaign with three of my mates. We all went around and we just pulled an all nighter and played Halo 3, and we collected all the skulls, we did everything, and I mean, it is an excellent game, and I think I then went on to replay it myself to do it on Legendary solo, which is something it was punishing to play a Halo game on Legendary on your own, but it was something I always made myself do with the first few titles, because it was such a sad, I love how Halo does difficulty, you know, it doesn't feel like it's ever cheating you. You feel like there's a way to beat every scenario, and it's just on you to figure it out and execute it. And I appreciate that.
Sit back and bees the spawn point. That's how it is.
For co-op Halo, that's pretty much how we used to do it. I remember the library, I think, was in Halo 1, wasn't it? One of the hardest levels ever. And I just remember hanging back while my friend just ran around with a shotgun, you know, but. As you say, like Halo 3, the story, the co-op experience, the multiplayer online, that's probably the Halo game I spent the most time playing online. Actually, funny enough, I used to play with a pro, well, who went on to be a pro. I was in a clan with a guy, and he went on to found a team that were like that. For a while, they were the strongest team in Europe. And oh my God, this guy, you could basically put him up against 20 players and he beat them 1v20. Like, it was insane. I have a lot of fond memories of Halo 3, but it'll probably be close between that and 2 and Reach for my favorite. All three were excellent.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for me, we're going to spend time on Halo because it's such a good franchise, but for me, Reach had the best, PvP, because just the customization and everything on it kind of had the perfect blend of Halo 3's system, and then it had Reach just adding that. Some people maybe said too much customization, but I just loved it. I mean, especially having Johnson's voice, that was just fucking brilliant. But no, Halo 3 was for me the perfect blend, and I couldn't leave Master Chief out of my list. That's why it's 3 over Reach for me. But number 5 on my list, Carl, is probably the only modern game, like, last few years for me, is Witcher 3. On this current gen of console, this is probably the only one here that it makes it, I think. So Witcher 3, it was such a special game. It just grabbed my attention. I mean, I played Witcher 2 a little bit, and I didn't finish it. It didn't grab me. But Witcher 3, it literally just consumed me. And everything on it, it's one of the best RPG games ever, and you can't really compare it to Bethesda titles and stuff like that, but in terms of gritty RPG, it is just absolute tops. It's just everything. Thing is, you didn't have to play Witcher 1 and didn't have to finish Witcher 2. You could feel the emotion between Yennefer, Geralt, Triss, such a good cast and such good dynamics and such good game. I need to go play it again and finish the DLC, and it's so good. I mean, did you play Witcher? I mean, Witcher 3, and did you play the other franchises, other part of the franchise?
Yeah, I played Witcher 3. I actually only finished it earlier this year. Like, cause I remember I bought it when I got swept up in the hype, but then I never got around to it. But I finally picked it up this year, and I put in 170 hours and I completed that and both the DLCs. And like, it really is one of those games that you're never really gonna forget it. Like, it's one of those kind of classics, like BioShock or The Last of Us, or, you know, it is just really good. And what the part of it that probably stood out to me the most was the character of Geralt. You know, with a lot of these big RPGs, the developers are like, yeah, no, we don't want to take the risk of writing a character, so we'll just let you make your own character and make them mute and no personality or whatever. But like, here's Geralt, like, and I know it's based on a book, and so therefore the character has to be one of the characters from the book. But at the same time, like, it's he's such like an intriguing character. I mean, you can really kind of relate to him. Like, to look at him, you'd be like, oh yeah, this guy's probably just your typical tough guy action. But there's a real kind of, he's very human, Geralt, you know.
He's meant to be emotionless, and I think that makes him more emotional, doesn't it? Because you can kind of put your own personal tweaks on Geralt, where he's meant to be this emotionless monster-slaying dude, but you can make him have love stories, you can make him just an absolute prick, you can make him quite kind. It's like, I think he's probably one of the best characters in gaming, because he is a character that's already designed, but you can put your own personal spin on it, can't you?
Yeah, and that's definitely a good way to describe it. Like, it's cool. It's like, here's this well-written character, but you can put your slant on it, and that's what I liked. You know, my Geralt personally was a very morale guy. You know, he did everything right. You know, But like you said, you could be a bit of an ass about things if you wanted to, and it's cool that you have that option with a pre-written character. But I mean, it's not just, not to knock the other characters. I mean, they're just, you know, I think in a world where I think the female characters are often put under a microscope, Ciri, Triss, and Yennefer. Yeah, the three of them are like such strong female characters, and you know, they're so interesting, and they're all foiled in their own way to Geralt's character, and but with that they still stand on their own. You know, I think it'd be cool if the next Witcher game, if like Ciri was the main character, like, because obviously she's playable in parts, so it'd be pretty cool to see what they did with that. Like, but yeah, like I can't say enough good things about the Witcher's storytelling and the open world and the even the thought that's put into like the simplest of side quests. Like, it's crazy how deep that game is.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, for me, this is what really announced CD Projekt Red as one of the best game developers. And obviously we saw at E3 with Cyberpunk getting that first trailer. I mean, playing The Witcher, if I hadn't played The Witcher 3, I'd probably look, okay, it's like, it's just going to be some Blade Runner type thing. But now that I know that's what CD Projekt Red are capable of, in a setting that is futuristic and a bit steampunk or whatever, no, not steampunk, that's a word, wrong word, but a bit futuristic setting, it's like, I want to know. I need this game injected into my veins. So just the fact that I now trust them as a developer, I mean, you've got a customer for life there. I mean, they could probably, similarly with Rockstar, if they released a ping pong game tomorrow, I'd probably go buy it. But speaking of Rockstar, number four is Red Dead Redemption. I'll probably do an honourable mentions, but GTA would have been there, but I've tried to keep it, like, one to... Not Rockstar. I could have put more Rockstars in, but one per franchise kind of thing. But Red Dead Redemption needed to be on my list because it's such a special game. John Marston. I mean, this list, my list, full of great characters, but John Marston's probably the best... Probably the best character in gaming for me. I mean, it's definitely out of him and Master Chief and someone else I'll come on to. But yeah, John Marston was just absolutely brilliant. And open world cowboy games, I mean, when I was younger, yeah, I played Gun, I played Red Dead Revolver. But when Red Dead Redemption came out, I pre-ordered it, special edition, everything. Skipped a P, revision class for school for my GCSE to go play this game. Ended up getting a D in PE. but fuck that, I played Red Dead Redemption before all my other mates, so fuck them. it's such a brilliant game. It's open world. It was cowboy GTA, but with such a more powerful story than other GTA games. I mean, some of GTA games have good stories, but Red Dead Redemption, so emotional, and eventually playing as Jack, I think his son was, and getting that revenge mission. I thought Jack was a bit of a whingy bitch, but again, just such an emotional story. And even the zombie DLC was fucking brilliant. It's hard to do. I mean, I think we've talked in previous pods about zombies getting stale, but that's probably the best zombie game ever, and it's only a DLC. But RDR for you, your thought?
Yeah, I mean, I think we touched on it previously when we were talking about Red Dead Redemption 2. And I mean, I picked this game up, I think it was a couple of weeks after it came out, and I bought that and another game at the same time. And I can't even remember what the other game was, which will kind of, tell you how much I loved Red Dead. I mean, I remember I was desperately trying to get it finished because I was going away for like a week, and I was even like, you know, I was like, I'd almost rather just stay at home and play this game. It's so good. I mean, I can't say enough good things about like Red Dead. I've always enjoyed Grand Theft Auto, and you know, I'd always kind of pick up a Grand Theft Auto at lunch and play it religiously till I finished it. But Red Dead possibly surpassed GTA because it was a Western setting. It was funny you mentioned Gone, and that was kind of my first experience with a game set in the Wild West. And, you know, growing up, I remember like my dad and my granddad both really liked Westerns, and that's something I could kind of share with them. I liked watching a Western. So getting to play a Western video game was just so cool. So it started with Gone, and then I never really got around to Red Dead Revolver, but then when Red Dead Redemption came out, I was just like, this is another level. And I couldn't be more excited for Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, so, it just can't come any sooner, but it's such a brilliant game. And it's quite possibly, I think it's better than Grand Theft Auto 5. I know a lot of people won't agree with that, absolutely. But I do prefer it, at least in terms of single player anyway. I think it's a better game.
Yeah, GTA 5 Online is just a completely different animal, but story-wise, Red Dead Redemption is the best Rockstar's ever done in terms of single player story, so yeah. But before I go into my top three, I'm going to do some special mentions. GTA 5, I'm going to have to put that in. I think San Andreas is really good, but GTA 5 Online is just an absolute other monster nowadays. Assassin's Creed Black Flag. I'm going to have to mention that because Assassin's Creed is such a big franchise and Black Flag saved that franchise for me, so I'm going to have to mention that. Ark Survival Evolved. It's not the best game, but I have put too many hours in that game to not be mentioned. Destiny 1, similarly to Ark, not the best game, but so many hours got to mention it. And I'm going to have to pick one out of the COD franchise, and it was between it was between 4, 5, and 6, and I've gone with 5 because the World War II setting, the fact I was actually quite good at it, helped as well. But it just seemed better. I mean, I think I preferred the World War II games, and that's why the new one is such a disappointment for me, because it's a bit shit compared to 5, and I went back and played 5 on backwards compatibility, and it still holds up, and it's probably still the best COD for me. It's just an absolute brilliant one. But that's my special mention there, so I'm going to do my top three. Oh, God. This order's going to kill me. But I've got it number three at the minute, but this may change at any point, so I'm going to go with it. Mass Effect 2, number three. It's a debate between 2 and 3 for some. I think 3 had probably a bit more better combat, but in terms of the story, I think number 2, it was so perfect in everything. I mean, 3 had some huge moments in it, but the ending was so disappointing for what it was. But 2 possibly had the best mission in gaming in terms of that suicide mission to finish the game. It's such a special franchise. I mean, 1's not everyone's cup of tea, and it's probably aged really badly, but 1 was bloody brilliant. 2 was perfect. 3 was near best game ever, if it just didn't have that ending. But I've gone for 2 because it was just bloody perfect. And I've talked about great characters throughout this game, and Commander Shepard is similarly to Geralt. He's obviously a set character, but you just put your own twist on it, and the Paragon, and I'm going to call it Bastard. Bastard.
Renegade.
Renegade, that's it. Renegade. So the Paragon and Renegade system, it was just so good. It was so good. And Mass Effect 2, is, I kind of want to go play it now. So what, you must have played Mass Effect.
Yeah, I mean, Mass Effect 2 was actually the first Mass Effect I really played. I mean, I remember a friend of mine was spending Christmas with me, and he got Mass Effect for Christmas. And he put it in, and I watched him play it for a little bit. But to be honest, at the time, I was really addicted to Bioshock. So I was kind of like, yeah, that's okay, but I just want to play more Bioshock. But I remember Mass Effect 2, a friend of mine got it and finished it, and he brought it over to my house, and he was like, you have to borrow this game. And I was like, all right. And I put it in and started playing, and I was like, wow, it just reminded me of like the years I'd watched Star Trek and stuff as a kid. And it's like all these aliens, and I wanted to know the lore about all these different races. And it was crazy. Like it was a world upon itself. And like I finished Mass Effect 2, I think definitely twice, but possibly 3 times in a row, like without playing a different game. Like I was that hooked on it. And like, of course, then by playing that made me say, oh, I want to play Mass Effect 1. So I went and bought like a pre-owned copy of Mass Effect 1 and played that. And then, of course, I picked up 3 when it came out. I mean, it's just that trilogy. It's just an excellent trilogy. And I probably agree with your point that of kind of ranking them, that, you know, I think 1 had the great ideas, but they didn't quite come to fruition till 2, and 3 probably further polished things, but just you have to take away some points for the ending. So I think, yeah, you're probably, well, you are definitely right with your thing on 2. And I'd agree that the whole suicide mission, and knowing the whole game virtually that you're gearing up to what's called a suicide mission, I mean, that's unheard of in games. Like, so yeah, I think Mass Effect 2 is an excellent pick to be in someone's top 3 games. Like, so I agree with that one.
It was the fact that choices went over to different games as well. Like, if you picked Ashley or the other bloke that nobody picked to survive. or if you kept the Krogans alive. Caden. God. Poor bloke. yeah, if you kept the Krogan alive and stuff like that. I mean, if anyone went into Free and Rex wasn't the king of that place, I mean, you're a dickhead. gotta say it. Got to say it. If Rex wasn't one of your lads, you're a bit of a dick. But no, it just Mass Effect as a franchise. I know Andromeda wasn't the best, but I still enjoyed it. It just wasn't Mass Effect. I've never cared about accompanying characters so much than Mass Effect, and it's just bloody brilliant how it does that. It's an imaginary character, and you sat there like trying to. The first time I did the suicide missions, I got most of them killed, and I was like, not doing the whole game again, not doing that again, never. so yeah, I made sure all of them survived, and then three, they were obviously still there. But top two time, God, it's going to be some special games to beat Mass Effect 2. But Arkham City, for me, people may rank this quite lowly in the trilogy. I'm not counting the Warner Bros. One. These are just Rocksteady ones. But Arkham Asylum was brilliant. Arkham Knight. I can't even remember the third one. It just didn't feel the same game to me. They kind of focused on the Batmobile a bit too much, and I'll have to mention it. Arkham Origins was a shite. But Arkham City for me was just absolutely perfect. Had the open world. It had all the characters that you know from the DC or the Batman universe. It was quite a long game. I'm not sure how many hours it probably took, but it took a good few hours to complete and stuff like that. And I literally did this game in one night. Like, I probably finished it like three times, but I went to my mate's house. He loaded up FM and I was like, oh, I don't know what to play. And he said, I'll just do Arkham City. So I just loaded up Arkham City, and next morning, oh, I finished Arkham City. it was just, it's similarly to Mass Effect 2, it was just perfect for me, and I loved it, and every boss fight seemed unique and stuff like that, and it's probably one of the reasons Batman's probably my favourite superhero, and you kind of got to talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and stuff like that. No character for me in the MCU is Batman, and Spider-Man's obviously got his video games and stuff like that, but Batman's got, he's got every bit of media down to a T, and maybe Spider-Man can regain it with a new game coming out, but the Arkham trilogy is, it's one of the best out there, and probably only topped by Mass Effect in terms of a trilogy, but Arkham City is such a special game for me, and I could play it endlessly, and I might actually do that because I've got it on Xbox One as well. But do need to finish Arkham Asylum. But the Arkham trilogy, is it something you've played?
Yeah, I mean, I started out with, I was a little late to the party with Arkham Asylum. I think I got it about a year after it came out. I picked up the classics version, but I mean, I got Arkham City shortly after launch. Finished that, and I got, I even enjoyed Arkham Origins, which I know gets a bit of stick, but you know, I enjoyed it for what it was. It was definitely the weakest game in the series, but like it had its moments, and then of course Arkham Knight finished it all off. And I mean, it is, as you say, it's so far, it's the pinnacle of superhero games, and you know, maybe we'll see what Spider-Man has to say about that in September, but for now, for anyone who is like into their superheroes, you know, if you want to play a game, you can't really do much. You can't do any better than Arkham City or Arkham Knight, really. So, I can certainly see why it's in your top 10. I mean, the gameplay that, I mean, either the traversing the city or the combat, and then the storytelling. Specifically probably in Arkham City, like it's amazing, like the just the idea that like criminals could take over the section of a city and that the only person that can stop them, of course, is Batman. Like it's a great concept. And I mean, I love that game too. Like, so I think it's definitely a fitting inclusion in as number two on your, well, I can't say that exactly yet because I don't know what number one is, but, no, it's a brilliant game.
Yeah, I think what made it special for me, because we've seen loads of different depictions of Batman and Joker especially, but Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy, they are Batman and Joker to me. I mean, Heath Ledger was obviously brilliant in The Dark Knight, but Mark Hamill, oh, Jesus Christ, he's just the perfect levels of mental, and his voice is just perfect for the Joker, and Kevin Conroy, blunt voice is just, it's just perfect for Batman. So I think this trilogy is just, it's just perfect for me. And having good voice actors, it just makes the world a difference, doesn't it? But number one time, Carl, I mean, do you want to have a guess what it is?
I mean, I was surprised when Assassin's Creed popped up in your honorable mentions. I thought that would definitely get a spot in your top 10.
It wasn't until Neil mentioned Pokemon.
I'm trying to, I mean, obviously been an Xbox gamer, you know, you jump to like Gears, but we've had that, Halo, we've had that, a Call of Duty, but we've had that. Ah! Is it a Battlefield game?
It is not a Battlefield game. It is an RPG.
Ah.
It is made by one of our favourite developers, both me and you. Has two big franchises. One's coming out later this year. But it's not that half of it. It's Bethesda.
Ah.
It is Oblivion.
I should have thought of that with Xbox. I know that game was on PlayStation, but it ran so terribly on PlayStation that it is kind of synonymous with Xbox.
It was the first game that attracted me to the RPG type thing, and I had played Morrowind on the PC actually. Oh no, on the original Xbox, but never. I was probably a bit too young to appreciate it, and then Oblivion came along. I think I got it for Christmas. I think it was one of the games I got with my 360, and I gave it a bash and stuff like that. And it wasn't my cup of tea at first, and eventually I got bored of the game I was playing, and Oblivion, I put that back in, and I got out of the tutorial area, and it was just so open, so beautiful at that time. If you went back now, you'd probably like be like, what the fuck are you going on about? But back then, it was so bright, it was so open, it was just everything. And it's not the main storyline. I mean, Sean Bean was there and stuff like that, but he wasn't the biggest part of the story, but just the Dark Brotherhood missions, the Fight Guild missions, the Mages Guild missions. I think that's where I think Oblivion had Skyrim. It the little things seem to be a bit better on Oblivion for me. And I mean, people may be pulling the hair out me saying Oblivion's better than Skyrim, but there's a certain Dark Brotherhood mission where you're going to get locked in the house, and the person who lasts there the longest was meant to win money, but you're obviously there to murder everyone, and you get bonus money if people don't figure out it's you. And it was just like, this is one of the funnest missions I've ever played. For me, it was just the pinnacle of gaming. It was so much freedom in a game. I never experienced that before that, and it was so easy to play. And obviously, you could put up the difficulty and stuff like that, but I just really loved it, and it brought the ease of playing it with the beautiful storytelling and of your own personal character, which is the Bethesda way and stuff like that. But it was just everything for me.
Yeah, I mean that's a pretty telling kind of description of why it is your number one game. So I think even if someone didn't like the game after hearing that, they're probably going to be like, well, I can see why he has it as his number one. I mean, yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Like it was my first kind of foray into that first person RPG. Well, not exactly, but but close to my first foray, because, you know, that genre had almost been like kind of a PC thing, and I was always a console gamer. I was more used to playing kind of third person RPGs, mostly of the Japanese style. But like Oblivion, I remember like when I first got my Xbox, like as I said, I got it with Gears of War and Pro Evo and I think a Call of Duty title. But when I kind of, well, I wouldn't say the addiction to those games ran off, because they never really did with Gears of War. But when I kind of wanted something else to play, and I remember I was in a clan at the time, and we were like, oh, what games should I get? And people were like, Oblivion. I was like, yeah, but that's not a multiplayer game. And they're like, so you have to play Oblivion. So like I picked up Oblivion, and I was like, this is just crazy. I like created my Argonian character, and
same.
I just
Argonian rule.
Yeah, that's it. And you just going around the world, and as you say, like you can just decide what kind of person you want to be, and the Dark Brotherhood, and probably had the best line, the best Dark Brotherhood line of quests that I've experienced, probably were in Oblivion.
Yeah.
And I mean, the game was just like, the funny thing is, like, the story in the game is not so bad, but you don't even really care about that, because there's so many other quest lines and just general exploration, like just going in some random dungeon and finding this really cool character and being like, there's nothing telling me to go here, but yet here I am. Like, and I, what if I'd never found this? Like, I just think it's that sense of a discovery that kind of was so new to me with Oblivion. Like, it's funny, same you said, you played Morrowind. I played Morrowind on the original Xbox as well. But I think Morrowind, just, especially when you're a little younger, like it has such a difficulty.
It was daunting, wasn't it? It was like,
it's so hard.
What's going on?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so my experience with that, at least originally, was only kind of messing around, but Oblivion was a totally new experience, and it kind of led me down kind of the rabbit hole with kind of those sort of games. So, I can. It really is a worthy number one. It's one of those games you couldn't argue with. You know, there's certain games where you'd be like, how can that be someone's favorite game?
Yeah.
But Oblivion, you know, whether it's your favorite or not, you know, you think it's a worthy inclusion.
If they remastered Oblivion, I would literally just live in that world. but they're never going to do it because they're bastards. But no, I mean, yeah, that's my top 10. If any of the listeners want to give in their top 10, I mean, we've had a couple in our WhatsApp group, but if listeners, if you want to post your top 10, just feel free to send it to the show, which is @oneup_AI. It'll obviously be sent in through, this will obviously be linked via the Twitter and stuff like that, on my personal one, which is @GuyDrinkle. Carl, do you want to give out your Twitter before we finish up? This has gone a bit longer than I thought it would.
Yeah, it's @KMacDW for all the kind of thoughts on gaming and other nerdy stuff, and then through that you can find my other Twitter.
Good stuff. And next week we'll be back with your top 10, Carl, and no spoilers, but is it going to be an epic one? Better be impressive.
I hope so. I think you know, there could be a couple of parallels with your own list, but ooh, I think there's enough kind of uniqueness to it as well that it's it'll be certainly worth listening in on. Just it'll give you a better idea of kind of what I'm interested in when it comes to games and genres and the like.
Good stuff. But we'll be back next week with Carl's top 10 and with news and. We'll probably talk about some of the games that are coming out if we do have time. I think the only ones that came out recently is Crash Bandicoot on Xbox and Switch, and The Crew 2 came out yesterday, I think it is, which was the 29th. But yeah, thanks for listening, everybody, and goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.